On the other hand, I think there are some important lessons in Genesis 20. So I'd like not to spend all of our time there, but what we have there is Abraham is lying again. He's worried, so he lies. And he's worried, so he lies, and it leads to serious danger. So, not a happy story. On the other hand, the lesson is worry can lead to more serious problems than one thinks. So, let's look at Genesis 20, even though we won't spend all morning on it, and verses 1 through 7. Now, Abraham journeyed from there, Hebron, toward the land of Negev, and settled between Kadesh and Shur. Then he sojourned in Gerar, we'd say by Gaza. Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." So Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream of the night and said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man, because you have the woman whom you have taken, she is married." Now Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, "Lord, will you slay a nation even though blameless? Did he not himself say to me, 'She is my sister'?" And herself said, "He is my brother. In integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, I have done this." Then God said to him in a dream, "Yes, I know that in the integrity of your heart you have done this. And I also kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet. He will pray to you, and you will live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." So we've heard to Genesis 13 in the past, where Abraham did this in the past. There was a famine in the land of Israel, and he did not go to God for help in the famine, and he tried to fix it himself. So he goes to Egypt, and he lies and says, "Sarah," half a lie, "she is my sister." He does not give out the information, "She is my wife," when you have this same thing. Now, why did he move near there in the first place? He must have been afraid, because he's moving into danger, so he must have moved away from danger. I don't know why he was afraid, because he seems like when the angels visit him at the tent, and the Lord visited him at the tent, he would have known that he was not in danger from Sodom and Gomorrah blowing up. But evidently, he got afraid, he moved down there, and then he did this lie. Now, I think we could have left this out, and it's not a very pleasant story. On the other hand, it shows that worry can lead to serious sin. That's kind of why I included it. Worry can lead to serious sin. Worry itself is a sin. Sermon on the Mount, take no thought for tomorrow. In other words, handle one day at a time. Do what we can about each problem. Psalm 127, don't rise up early or stay up late. He gives to his beloved even in their sleep. Concern is okay. Paul said he was concerned about the churches. Doing what we can about problems is okay, but if we can't fix it at the end of the night, turn it over to God and be done with it. But here is a situation where worry led to the rationalization of lying, and then to a very serious danger for both of them, close to adultery. Now, I think the story is awful. Myself, I can't think like a person in a dictatorship, and I can't think like a 100-year-old. You know, my first response is, go get a gun and protect your wife. That is my first response. Go get a gun and protect your wife. But I can't think like in a dictatorship, although I think this is a very serious danger. And the main point is, worry led to rationalization, led to lying, and led to a very serious danger. So worry, you know, on a list of sins, worry may not be at the top, but worry can lead to choices. And worry can lead to really bad choices. And worry can lead to rationalization of doing other wrongs, supposedly to protect the worry, although I don't know how it does. So he's an example of worry causing us to make bad choices. And that would be the reason why, say, panic and anxiety and worry is a little bit more serious than we might think. On any given day, we might worry about something and it might go away and it might not be any problem, but it can be. And I do have other illustrations, but you might know these people, so I can't use them. I have that philosophy. But panic and anxiety, making a bad decision from it. There's also here, and part of the reason I repeat it, a pattern of the same thing. And that happens. Abraham's tendency was to worry and then lie about it. Now, others have a tendency maybe to be very angry all the time and be violent. Others have a tendency to drink too much. And each one of us has what the book of Hebrews might call a besetting sins, a particular proneness to it. Abraham's proneness was to worry and then lie, supposedly to deal with the worry, which caused greater danger in both cases. Also, when we get to Genesis 26, Isaac will do the same thing, and Isaac's not even born yet. So that's going to be another example of kind of like father, like son. The example of worry, then lying, in the father is going to be like worry, then lying in the son. So we have a lesson where worry might be more serious than we think. We also have a lesson whereby the next generations tend to pick up the habit of the older ones. Even though it was a pagan, Abimelech was a pagan, adultery was considered a serious sin even among the pagans. And it says in verse 6, I kept you from sinning. That's an interesting thought. God keeping people from sinning. I don't think he always does. Obviously, sins happen all the time, 24/7. So he doesn't always keep people from sinning. But the very example here of keeping a person from sinning is very interesting. We have in the Lord's Prayer regarding ourselves, lead us not into temptation, deliver us from evil, and a good prayer. It doesn't say deliver them from temptation, deliver them from evil, but that's kind of what God did, even without anybody praying. So kind of a good idea, maybe to pray for our friends that they don't harm themselves. And God keeps them from making bad choices. So, you know, regarding even leaving things out, the first reference in verse 7 to the word prophet anywhere in the Bible is in verse 7. So that's part of the reason I kept leaving this in here. Worry causes more serious sins and bad choices. One generation's flaws might lead to flaws in the next generation. Patterns. And Abraham had this pattern. And another reason to leave in here, first reference to a prophet anywhere in the Bible is right here. Navi. Navi is prophet. They found a seal a couple of years ago, Isaiah the Navi. Isaiah the prophet. It probably is a seal of the prophet Isaiah, and it was found just a few feet away from King Hezekiah's seal, and that was found in the ground. So the Navi or prophet. One thing here is Abraham didn't so much give information about future predictions as prophet here means divine revelation from God. And I think often as not, that's what it means in the Bible. Moses was a prophet, divine revelation from God. David was a prophet, divine revelation from God. Abraham was a prophet because God talked to him, not so much always seeing the future. There are no prophets today. The prophets and apostles were the founding period of the church. We're not in the founding period of the church. The closest we get now is to read the books the prophets wrote, which is what we're doing this morning. That's the closest to divine revelation we get today, at least in the sense of divine revelation that gives commands for everybody. It might allow a personal revelation. I think we don't want to tie God's hands. It might allow a few of those personal, but if someone stands up and say, God gave me a dream, now he wants all of you to do this, I think that is the role of a prophet. I don't think they exist anymore. And by the way, the last time I heard it, a person said he had a divine revelation that everybody should give him money. Yeah. You got one too, huh? That one was in Tulsa, by the way. All righty. Well, there's prophet, divine revelation. Verses 8 and following. To Abimelech arose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their hearing, and the men were greatly frightened. And Abimelech called Abraham, what have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done. And Abimelech said to Abraham, what have you encountered that you have done this thing? Abraham said, because I surely thought there is no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she actually is my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. It came about when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, if this is the kindness which you will show to me everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother. See the pattern? That means at least three times. Verse 14, Abimelech then took sheep and oxen and male and female servants, gave them to Abraham and restored his wife Sarah to him. Abimelech said, behold, my land is before you, settle wherever you please. To Sarah he said, and I think it's kind of sarcastic, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. And then the rest of it, Abraham prayed and Abimelech was okay. Here's a case of going to someone with a sin. Matthew 18 allows that. They think it has to be a serious sin, and this one was. But love covers a multitude of sins, so let a lot of things go. But if someone is serious, go to a person and see if there can be a reconciliation. That's the right thing to do. Matthew 18 is going private to start with. I have to almost bring it in. She is my half-sister. Leviticus 18 will give a list of prohibited marriages. By the time of the law of Moses, it had not yet been given. And so in Genesis, we see all these marriages of relationships that would later be prohibited. I do think that probably genetically the human race was getting worse and is getting worse. And so by the time of Moses, things that happened in Genesis are being prohibited. Don't get too far away from Abraham. Another book, though, I read this year is called Darwin Devolves. Darwin Devolves is an argument that the human race is getting worse, not better, genetically. And I think that is true. Michael Behe, if you like to read Creation Science, Attacks on Evolution, Michael Behe. So anyway, they had these sort of relationships, but prohibited later, but he didn't tell the whole truth. He gave a half-truth and a lie based on worry. And worry can lead to more serious sins. Therefore, worry has to be somewhat checked and not allow a rationalization. With that, we come to the more important Genesis 21, and now the promised son is born. Then the Lord took note, Hebrew is visited, the Lord took note of Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the appointed time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Yitzhak, or Isaac. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now, Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne a son in his old age. The child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. Well, taking out the word named Sarah in verse 1, we have this phrase, the Lord did as he had promised. So that's the main lesson of the Abraham story. The fulfillment of the promise took a long time, 25 years. Fulfillment of promises can take a long time, and yet 25 years was not long to God, and it happened. So sometimes we have great promises, and they don't happen right away, but the story of Abraham shows that they will happen. That's why I had Ken read Numbers 23:19. God is not a man that he should lie. He made a promise, he'll do it. Titus 1:2, in the hope of eternal life, which God, who cannot lie, promised. Hebrews 6:19, is impossible for God to lie. We have a lot of them. I can't review them all, but I'd like to add in Hebrews 3, where Jesus is the heir of all things, and Romans 8, where we are co-heirs. So, basically, we're promised to co-rule with Jesus, and he will run everything. So, in addition to streets of gold and pearly gates, timing is up to God. And the story of Abraham shows it can take a while, and it can be frustrating. And they had trouble. They went up and down with their faith. Abraham never had no faith. But he would go deep faith, problems. It's never that he got to the bottom where there was no faith, but deep faith, problems. And Genesis 21 is a good thing. 25 years, but God did for Sarah as he had promised, verse 1, and God will do for all of us as he has promised. The key would be in verse 2, the phrase, at the appointed time. And they give a feast for Ishmael, and we made reference to that. And now there's some jealousy from Ishmael. Now let's read in verse 9. Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, mocking. It's actually laughing. Emphasized. Verse 10, therefore she said to Abraham, drive out this maid and her son, for the son of this maid shall not be an heir with my son Isaac. Laughter, both they laughed when they said they were going to have a son, but also they were laughing when the son was born, more positively. It means smiling too. Laughter and smiling. So it wasn't all a reminder they had disbelieved the promise. Some of it was they were just laughing and smiling when he was born. So drive her out. But verse 11, the matter distressed Abraham greatly because of his son. God said to Abraham, do not be distressed because of the lad and your maid. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her, for through Isaac your descendant shall be named. And of the son of the maid I will make a nation also, because he is your descendant. So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water, and gave them to Hagar, putting them on her shoulder, and gave her the boy, and sent her away, and she departed and wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water in the skin was used up, and she left the boy under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite him, about a bow shot away from him. Do not let me see the boy die. And she sat opposite him and lifted up her voice and wept. God heard the lad crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven, said to her, "What is the matter with you, Hagar? Do not fear, for the Lord has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him by the hand, for I will make a great nation of him." And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. God was with the lad, and he grew, and he lived in the wilderness and became an archer. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him out of the land of Egypt. Ishmael was actually the result of working to get God's promise. Now, that's never the case. God does not want us to work to get God's promise, but that was their idea. We can have a son a different way. We do not work to get God's promise of salvation. It's all by grace. But here, Abraham is worried that Ishmael has to go away. Was this too concerned for the mother? Was she overreacting? I would think probably not. The word for mocking is Isaac. This is the word for laughter, but in Hebrew it is an emphatic form. So he was is translated mocking in our translation, even though it's the word for laughter, but it's a serious mocking. I'd like to think it was not life and death danger for little Isaac. He wasn't necessarily going to kill him right then, but it was a very serious making fun of him. And had it gone on over the years, it may have become serious. I think Sarah is not overreacting. How old were they? Well, Isaac was two, maybe a little bit more in those days, not much more. Ishmael is 16, and had it gone on, it would have been worse. We can look at the emphasis upon mocking here. Galatians 4 actually helps because when Paul reads the story, he calls it persecution. The son of the slave girl persecuted the son of the wife. Persecuted. So persecuted doesn't have to mean it was life and death at the party, but it was a little more serious than just making a joke, a little more serious than jealousy, and dangerous enough that Sarah was not just being oversensitive, not just being vindictive. God told Abraham to go ahead and agree with that and to let them move away. It bothered him because he cared about Ishmael, and yet Ishmael would not be the son of the promise. He would not get the land. That would be for Isaac's descendants. That would be for Israel. That would not be for Ishmael's descendants. It would not be for the Arabs. So, knowing they would be all right, and that God would use Ishmael greatly, Abraham was less worried about them. I sent them away. They ran out of water, went to Beersheba. Now, I'm weird, but among the interests to me is that they keep calling him a boy. He's 16. Boy, lad, boy. The reason I think about this is we do not know the age of accountability. When is a person old enough that they can make a choice in our time to reject Jesus as Savior, that they are accountable for their own decisions? When are they beyond childhood? I think the age of accountability is a biblical truth. Isaiah 7 talks about people that were too young to know good from evil. There is such a youthfulness, infancy, toddlers, childhood, where they are not yet morally accountable for God. How old is it? I don't know. God told Jonah that he had saved in Nineveh, that God had saved 120,000 people who did not know their left hand from their right. They're too little. They don't know. When don't they know? I think if we lost a child, we, the human race, lost a child, that person would go to heaven. Matthew 18:10 refers to children who have the angels in heaven or guardian angels. Matthew 18:14, it's not the will of your Father in heaven that any one of these little ones should perish. For theological reasons I can't go into, I think that it is the rejection of Christ that is the main, shall we say, eternal death penalty. And little people cannot yet make that decision. What would be the age of accountability? I don't know for certain, but I have for a long time thought it might be older than what we think. Mainly like stories like this, he's 16, he's a boy. In the Book of Numbers, don't count anybody who's under 20. So I don't know where it is. I suspect it varies from individual to individual. And God knows the exact date. But I do kind of feel comfortable in thinking the age of accountability is a little bit older than what people commonly think. At any rate, Ishmael's still a boy, and he's 16, and he collapses. Hagar couldn't stand to watch it. Evidently, he can't walk anymore, and she can. So she moves a bow shot away. I don't know. Half a football field, she moves away. It says, God heard the boy crying. That's the Hebrew word, Ishmael. Shema, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. Deuteronomy 6, that's called the Shema. El, Ishmael, El is God hears. God listened to the boy. Evidently, he's in worse shape than she is. And she has given the good news that he will survive and given the ability to find the water. From Ishmael is one of the Arab tribes, maybe not all of the Arab tribes, Midianites and Amalekites from a different direction, but one of the Arab tribes. Here they will live in what Paran, what we would call the Sinai, but that's awfully close to Gulf of Aqaba and going over into what we call Saudi Arabia today. So at this time, God said, I will use Ishmael, he will live. But Isaac and his descendants will be the ones who have the land and get the Abrahamic promise. Abraham stayed in the promised land, and these moved on. Now they dug a well, which I never intended to read all about it, but I want to read a new name for God that comes in. So, like my glance at verse 22, a different Abimelech, what that is a dynastic title. There's different people, but it's like we would say Pharaoh, Caesar, or President. And this is a different king, although he has his dad's kingdom. And they're fighting over a well, and Abraham's going to get the well. And let's just read the new name for God, mainly in verse 33. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree at Beersheba, and there he called the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned in the land of the Philistines many days. Beersheba means well of the oath. So Abraham's people dug the well. Abimelech's people stole the well. That would be a hard job, digging a well out in the desert. And they stole it. And then they had a covenant or an agreement or an oath that it belonged to Abraham. So the name of it is the Well of the Oath. Tamarisk tree. Now, so I go over and look at pictures of tamarisk trees on the internet. If the ones in America are the same, they're really quite something. They have pink flowers on them. So if you're bored, might look at a tamarisk tree. Now that would kind of remember that. That would kind of be a memorial tree. Here it is. This belongs to Abraham. Main reason, though, we read this verse is here's another name for God. He is already El Shaddai back in Genesis 17, the Almighty God. Now he is the everlasting God, El Olam. The word everlasting has occurred already in Genesis with the everlasting covenant to Abraham. But now here's a new name for God. He is eternal. That would remind Abraham that his covenant is eternal. But it reminds us that life is eternal. And everlasting life by trusting in Jesus does go on and on and on. It's a duration of time, but the main reason it goes on and on and on is everlasting life is a union with God. Jesus defines everlasting life in John 17, and everlasting life is that they know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom you have sent. So everlasting life is qualitative. Believers are one with God. That's why it goes on and on and on, but we're all united with him. That's why the calendar keeps going on and on, but it's oneness. Well, that will do, but I think I'd like to pray. And let me go through a list. Ron, do you want to pray too? We don't want too many people, but keep praying for Susan Lewis and Kathy.